this meeting of the Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee to order. We are holding this remote hearing under House Rule 10.01. We will start with the roll. Anna, please go ahead.
Chair Becker Finn.
Present.
Representative Mueller.
Present.
Representative Scott, excused. Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Frazier.
Present.
Representative Grossel. Representative Hurd.
Present.
Representative Hollins.
Present.
Representative Johnson.
Present.
Representative Liebling.
Present.
Representative Long.
Present.
Representative Mortensen.
Present.
Representative Novotny.
Present.
Representative Farr.
Present.
Representative Robbins.
Present.
Representative Vang.
Present.
Representative Zhang.
Present.
Representative Grossel, present.
All right, Representative Grossel is present. A quorum is present. First order of business is the minutes from yesterday. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I noted, I would move approval of the minutes, but I would like to offer correction if I could. My name was missed in the roll. So you know, I looked at them.
Very good. All right. So with that correction, all those in favor of approving the minutes, please say aye.
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 Opposed? All right. The minutes are approved. Thank you, Representative Liebling. Members, first bill on our agenda today is House File 108. It is a Representative Noor bill. I will just note that we're going to focus on the provisions that are within the jurisdiction of this committee. Welcome to the committee, Chair Noor. I will move that House File 108 be recommended to be placed on the General Register. The bill is now before us. Chair Noor, please tell us about your bill.
Good morning and thank you, Madam Chair and members. This bill prohibits employers from requesting or using credit information as a condition of employment for hiring, firing, promotion, or compensation determination, or in any way or shape or form that affects the terms and conditions of their employment. Can you imagine being denied a job because of your credit information due to financial hardships, especially during COVID-19 pandemic, where many people are unable to pay their bills on time, and then also being told that you cannot get unemployment? Can you imagine being denied a job because of inaccurate reporting on your credit information? This is a process that is being used by many employers to deny well-qualified candidates an opportunity to have a job and maybe to be able to pay their debt. Credit information includes credit score or history, credit account balance, payment history, or saving or checking account balances or account numbers. Madam Chair and members, this is truly an invasion of individuals' privacy. There are several exceptions, including in this bill, if the information is required under state or federal law, or if there are any valid businesses needed for the information. This bill excludes financial institutions and credit union employer, peace officers, financial managers position, or position involving routine access to confidential financial or personal information, large cash transactions, or financial fiduciary responsibility. The bill provides a private civil cause of action for violations. An injured employee may seek damages as well as injunctive relief and reasonable attorney's fees and costs. That's the section that we're focused on this article in this committee. The data shows that when credit information is used in hiring, it disproportionately impacts BIPOC job applicants. Prospective employees are not customers of credit reporting agencies. In fact, they are the product. Credit reporting agencies package up consumers' data to sell to lenders, employers, landlords, insurers, and other businesses. In fact, over 40% of employers today use some form of credit information in determining their hiring process or purposes. Today, credit information is not only used by the lenders as it was used, but for everyone who needs it for any purposes. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I ask for your support for this bill. Thank you so much. I stand ready to answer any questions that you may have.
All right, thank you, Chair Noor. Members, any questions regarding subdivision 1D? Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have a question. I just have a very brief comment, which is that I strongly support this bill and actually just received an email from a constituent yesterday who was denied employment because of a failed credit check. And I thought I would just read three sentences from the email that they sent. It said he's 34, he's been unemployed, and he thought he had a position lined up perfectly, position doing IT help desk work. The 11th hour, he received a call from the employer that they were choosing not to go ahead because of a failed credit check. Credit isn't good enough for them. I went through a very expensive program at school that didn't work out in the end for medical reasons, and I suppose that having a large number of student loans just wasn't okay for them. So this is an individual who was working in IT and was denied because they had too many student loans. So I just wanted to give that one constituent face for this problem and really appreciate Representative Noor, you bringing this important bill forward.
Thank you, Representative Long, for sharing that good example of the difference this bill could make. Members, any other questions regarding House File 108? All right. Seeing none, I will renew my motion that House File 108 be recommended to be placed on the General Register. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Beckerfin.
Aye.
Representative Mueller.
Aye.
Representative Scott, excused. Representative Feist.
Aye.
Representative Frazier.
Aye.
Representative Grossel. Representative Grossel.
Aye.
Representative Hurt.
Aye.
Representative Hollins.
Aye.
Representative Johnson.
Aye, with reservations.
Representative Liebling.
Aye.
Representative Long.
Aye.
Representative Mortensen.
No.
Representative Novotny.
Pass.
Representative Farr.
No.
Representative Robbins.
Aye.
Representative Vang.
Aye.
Representative Zhang.
Aye.
There are 13 ayes, 2 nays, and 1 abstention.
The motion prevails, and House File 108 is on its way to the General Register. Chair Noor, I apologize. I didn't let you have a final closing. Is there anything else you'd like to share with us about this bill?
I appreciate it. Thank you so much to you, Madam Chair, members.
Thank you, Chair Noor, and thank you for coming before our committee and being prepared this morning right away. Next bill on our agenda is House File 2124. This is a Representative Keeler bill. Members, our discussion will be regarding the relevant provision related to data. Representative Keeler, welcome to our committee. I will move that House File 2124 be recommended to be referred to the Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform Committee. Representative Keeler, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. As many of you have probably heard in other presentations, we had a task force for murdered and missing Indigenous women, and from that task force, we're moving forward to hopefully implement an office that will oversee what we're now calling MMIR, which is Murdered and Missing Indigenous Relatives, for the inclusion factor. And so one of the main things that we've all talked about and why this is so important is the lack of data and the lack of data collection and sharing for us to know and understand how this is really affecting all of our communities, but then also how we gain that collection, share it with state and federal organizations and at that level, but more importantly, how we share that with our tribes. You know, with the data, it tells a story that we all know is there, that we can build upon, share in a safe way, as you see, that this is something that needs to be built and shared out so that we can continue to keep our Indigenous sisters and brothers and relatives safe. As we continue to learn about it, the more and the better that we can do. So with that, I do think I have one testifier with me today.
Yep. Thank you, Representative Keeler. I have Catherine Weeks. Please introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Kate Weeks. I'm the Executive Director of the Office of Justice Programs with the Department of Public Safety. Our role in the MMIW task force was to help support the work of that task force. As Representative Keeler said, the 2020 MMIW task force report contains many recommendations on how to best address this epidemic. One of the primary mandates is an MMIR office to continue to address the root causes and systems and practices that perpetuate this issue. The task force identified numerous ways that data will enhance the understanding of this issue, identify where gaps in data perpetuate the epidemic, and show progress in addressing the systemic issues in Minnesota. Data is essential for the MMIR office to act on these recommendations made in the report and to meet the requirements of this legislation, including reporting back to the legislature. Representative Keeler really captured the need for this very well, so I can stand for questions.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Weeks. Members, discussion to the bill. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Keeler. You know, on the section of access to data, I just wondered, there's no retention policy in that subdivision 8. There's nothing about audit trails. You know, channeling Peggy Scott, who's not with us this morning, I just want to ask if you would consider adding some guardrails around that. There doesn't seem to be any language other than that this person has access to the data.
Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Robbins. I actually was looking forward to Representative Scott's input on this because I know as we've been in other committees, that's one of the things she brings up, but absolutely. And I know that I have a meeting, I think, with you to follow up, and maybe it's one of the things that we can kind of add to the docket for us to talk about, because as it's been brought to my attention, I agree. I think it's something that we need to add.
Thank you. And I will note that we're sending this to public safety, so there is time for folks to have conversations and work on making an even better bill. Any follow-up, Representative Robbins? Okay. Representative Johnson.
Chair Becker-Finn, Representative Keeler. On this, there looks like there's like going to be a lot of private and confidential corrections and detention data, as well as possibility of medical data. Could you explain why they need this information to perform the duties?
Representative Keeler, or I'm not sure if Ms. Weeks may be the best person to answer that question.
I think, Madam Chair, so Representative Johnson, you're asking as we build an office around the data for murdered and missing Indigenous women, why we need medical information? I just want to make sure I'm understanding your question.
Representative Johnson.
Yeah, in the bill, it talks about medical data as well, and confidential corrections and detention data. I'm just wondering what data you're going to be collecting and also how long you're going to be keeping that data. That in order to perform the duties for the person in charge and for that office to do its work.
Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative Johnson. I think that as we talk about any situations around any populations that are murdered or go missing, there's an element of medical documentation that needs to be provided. As we know, and as we look at these stories, these awful stories, that when individuals have been abducted or taken, often there's physical harm that's done as well. And so we're not looking at like all of the medical history that they've ever had, but a lot of this and a lot of the stories that are being told have implications around their physical well-being. I will give one example that happened in my community with Savannah Graywind. That as she was taken, I don't know if you're familiar with this story and why this is so important to our communities, but her baby was cut out of her stomach. That is a medical part of this huge epidemic that we have. So, I mean, I think that as we move forward, we need to be mindful that this is awful. This is an awful thing that's happening to our communities. And so, of course, we would need to have access to the medical piece of it. And also any of the other background that tells the full entire story. As far as your question with how long this data will be used, I mean, I think that it would be used in the space of being able to open cold cases. That's one of the things that this office is also going to do. And so the length of which we would utilize this data, I'm not completely sure of. Maybe Mrs. Weeks, you know that.
Ms. Weeks.
Chair members, I think one of the pieces that the report really touched on is the inadequacy of the data that is available. One of the things that the MMIR office is tasked with doing is really making sure that we're collecting and maintaining and looking at accurate data and what that means, so that systems are tracking this epidemic, so that the MMIR office, in addition to state agencies, federal, local, are changing policies and practices to better serve Indigenous communities to stop this epidemic. As for retention, Representative Keeler did mention that she is willing to talk about that. The state does have retention records, policies and practices, so that would still apply to this office. And it doesn't look like the classification of the data changes, so it would still remain private and confidential.
Thank you, Ms. Weeks. Let's see. Next on the list is Vice Chair Moeller. Oh, Representative Johnson.
Yeah, I just had one more question with some of the data that was brought up here. Some of this data, it looks like it's going to be investigative data that's looking at, and a lot of that is very confidential, dealing with the investigations. Very limited access as current and ongoing investigations is protected very closely to make sure information is not leaked to the public where on certain crimes that only the perpetrator would actually know. Are they going to have access to the investigative data as well as the investigation itself?
So Representative Johnson, I will just clarify, if folks will look at line 4.4, it has access to corrections and detention data and medical data maintained by an agency, and that data will still be maintained as private or confidential data. So there's no mention whatsoever of investigative data in the bill. Representative Keeler, I don't know if you have anything additional to follow up. All right, any additional questions, Representative Johnson?
No, that would be the reason I brought that up, because they talked about cold cases. If the cold cases they're working on, that is still investigative data. So I just wanted to clarify to make sure that they're not going to be getting access and making sure that investigative data on ongoing investigations is not released. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Vice Chair Moeller.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Keeler, for bringing this bill. I think it's a great bill. And I also noticed that the executive director is a member of the Minnesota State Retirement Association, meaning that they are a state employee and they're still subject to all, I think it's been brought up, they're still subject to all the other protections in Chapter 13, including 1309, which provides for penalties if data is improperly shared. And I think it's important to just remember that 1309 exists elsewhere in statute, and it is a good guardrail. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Vice Chair Moeller, for that reminder. It's always good to have folks who've got more of the data background, which is why we have the bills coming to our committee. Not seeing any other hands. Closing words, Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I've taken many notes in this short conversation because, as like we've mentioned, we do want to make this the best bill that we possibly can so that we can move forward in this work. This is meaningful work, and this is something that we absolutely need to stand behind. I think every single one of us have Indigenous relatives in our communities. This is not something that just happens in our tribal lands and our tribal nations. And so this is a statewide, nationwide epidemic. So I appreciate your support, and I look forward to moving forward together to make this the best bill that we can. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 2124 be recommended to be referred to the Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Becker-Finn.
Aye.
Representative Mueller.
Aye.
Representative Scott, excused. Representative Feist.
Aye.
Representative Frazier.
Aye.
Representative Grossel. Representative Grossel. Representative Herr.
Aye.
Representative Hollins.
Aye.
Representative Johnson.
Aye.
Representative Liebling.
Aye.
Representative Bloom.
Aye.
Representative Mortensen.
No.
Representative Novotny.
Aye.
Representative Hart.
Aye.
Representative Robbins.
Aye.
Representative Vang.
Aye.
Representative Zhang.
Aye.
Representative Grossel.
Aye.
There are 15 ayes and one nay.
Thank you. With that, the motion prevails and House File 2124 is on its way to the Public Safety Committee. Thank you very much for this really important work, Representative Keeler. You know, when we set up task forces, it's really only valuable if we then move forward with the recommendations that come out of those task forces. So I think this is a really good first step, and I'm glad that we're moving quickly in making these recommendations from the task force reality. So thank you very much, Representative Keeler. Last bill on the agenda today is Representative Herr. So this is House File 972 regarding interpreter pay and reimbursement. We amended the bill on March 16th, which was still this week, and laid it over, and we ran out of time. And so we are bringing the bill back up so we can finish our discussion of this bill. Representative Herr, would you like to move your bill, House File 972, as amended? All right, Representative Herr, I think your video is,
can you hear
me? You might
need
to turn off your, I can hear you now, yep. Would you like to move your bill?
Let me just try to,
need to turn off your video. Yeah. All right, thank you. Representative Herr moves 972 as amended, and we do have some testifiers that we weren't able to get to earlier this week, so Representative Herr, please tell us about your bill, or we can go straight to the testifiers, whatever you'd prefer.
Madam Chair, and I'll just repeat really quickly that there is, you know, the interpreters have not received, the court interpreters have not received a pay increase in over 20 years. They received a small one back in 2017, and that only increased their rate by $2, or a really small percentage, 4%. And other interpreters within the system are $20 ahead of them per hour. And so that's just a quick summary. And then I would like to turn it over to our testifiers who were not able to testify last time. And with us today, we do have, there's been a little bit of a change, but we do have Sally that is here with us. And I can turn it over to her first.
All right, Sally, please introduce yourself for the record and then go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Sally Nichols. I'm a certified Spanish interpreter, and I work as a freelance interpreter in the Minnesota State Court system. And the reason for this bill is, as Representative Herr pointed out, our wages have been really frozen for a long time. When I first moved to Minnesota in 1999, I was making more or less what I'm making now. And I was a single mother back then, but I was able to support myself. I'm still a single mother now, and we did receive a $2 increase, as Representative Herr said, in 2017, but it was a minimal amount. It was 4%, and that was after almost about 20 years, you know, and nothing since then. So as inflation goes up, but our wages don't go up, we continuously struggle to stay in this profession, which we really love, and we believe we're a very strong and important part of the court system. But I routinely, and many other interpreters routinely, am struggling and juggling between paying my taxes, which are significantly higher as a freelancer, paying my health care, which is significantly higher as a freelancer, and paying my mortgage, which is no higher than anyone else's. But it used to be I was able to do all those things. Now I'm always behind on at least one of them, which means that I have to face a decision, as so many of my colleagues do, about whether I can afford to stay in this profession and or whether I need to move on and do other things, which many of my colleagues have. We've been unofficially keeping tabs on the interpreters in the roster by periodically calling them all and emailing them all. And since we began doing that about 2 years ago, we've lost at least 20% of the interpreters who were available for interpreting on the roster. They've all left to do other things for different reasons, but the main reason was the lack of ability to support themselves as a freelance court interpreter. That's pretty much the extent of my testimony, and I would be happy to answer any questions that anyone has.
All right, thank you, Ms. Nichols. Next on the list, I have Edith Hansich. Edith, if you could introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Yes, good morning. My name is Edith Gamero de Hansich, and I want to thank you for having me hearing me testify this morning. My name is Edith Gamero de Hansich, as I said, and I have been a judicial interpreter for the past 16 years. And I had been working, I decided to take the rigorous training and test to obtain my certification because I have a profound respect of the judicial system of the United States of America. It is clear that my job is not only important, but that it is essential in ensuring that there is justice available for all. During these years, I have witnessed how outcomes have drastically changed with the precision of my interpretation instead of the courtroom in cases where, in the interest of saving time or money or out of sheer ignorance, a child or a friend or a family member of a party involved in a case had been used to interpret part of the proceeding that takes place outside of the courtroom. And that is why, in spite of earning close to the same income that was established 20 years ago, I continue working in this profession. And because I have a partner who has provided a steady income and the benefits for our family, I urge you to appropriate the money that can finally bring interpreters to a point of not having to decide to continue working in our profession or putting food on the table. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And last, we have April Cedillo. April, if you could introduce yourself for the record and then go ahead with your testimony.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is April Cedillo, and I'm a state certified Spanish interpreter, and I've been so for the last 20 years. I'm also the owner of a boutique interpreting agency called Link Interpret. We've been open for 12 years, and we provide judicial interpreters to private law firms. I actually am appearing this morning as an expert witness, and I would be happy to answer any questions that representatives may have about the bill.
All right, thank you. We do have a couple of questions. Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Curious question. Who actually does this certification? What's the difference between certified and non-certified? If they're not certified, is there still some level of education or expertise?
Yes, Representative. This is April Cedillo.
Ms. Cedillo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would be happy to answer that question for you. Certified interpreters have gone through rigorous training and have passed a rigorous exam to become certified. It is less than 20% of candidates who take the test actually pass the test. And the state does the certification process. Right now we have certification for several languages. There is a second level for interpreters who are not certified, and those are called roster interpreters. They're on the state roster as having passed their ethics exam and having passed a background check and having passed an orientation for the state, but roster interpreters actually have taken no language testing to ensure the accuracy of their interpreting skills.
Follow-up, Representative Novotny?
That's fine. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Madam Chair, can I just add a quick follow-up?
Yep, Representative Herr.
And I just wanted to say that there is a pay differential between the court, the certified interpreters and the roster interpreters. And so just to, for people to be aware that they're not paid the same rate.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Herr. Vice Chair Mohler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Herr, for this bill. I think it's really important, and I do have a couple questions. I'm curious first about where we are with receiving the fiscal note from the courts, and I don't know if anybody from the courts is on the call, or maybe Mr. Walls can speak to that, or maybe you know, Representative Herr, where we are with that.
Representative Herr.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Vice Chair Mohler, for the question. We have been working very closely with the courts. We are awaiting actually numbers from them. Our research, Mr. Ben Johnson, has actually been the one who's been in contact with them, and we have not received the information as of about 3 days ago.
All right, thank you. Is anybody from the courts here, or does somebody from House Research have anything to add? Looks like Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, members, just very briefly, we've been back and forth with the courts a few times. I don't understand all the ins and outs of the details, but they've been having some difficulty untangling the specific numbers needed here from some other numbers based on how they do their budgeting. Mr. Walls put in a FIDE, which should help the courts to give specific numbers, and I believe he told me that there's a due date on that of this coming Monday.
All right, thank you, Mr. Johnson. Hopefully the courts will get the message that we need that information as soon as possible. Additional follow-up, Vice Chair Mohler.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, and I do really hope the courts can get that information as soon as possible to us. Also, just wanted to ask about the importance of in-person interpreting versus virtual. It's my understanding that interpreters often use body language and to assist them in interpreting, and I would just like to hear from our testifiers about that. Thanks, Madam Chair.
I see Ms. Cidio is nodding, so I'm going to go to her first.
Representative Mueller, I'd be happy to answer that question. It is much better for us interpreters to interpret in person. We do rely greatly on things besides for just the words that are spoken, such as body language. And to be able to see a person's whole body and to be there in person does help us pick up on those things. Of course, right now, during the pandemic, just like everybody else, we have been working over video. I think we've done a really great job stepping up during the pandemic to continue providing equal access to justice in our court system. And I've been extremely proud of our colleagues for scrambling and learning so quickly how to do so. It's been so important. And we are greatly looking back to returning in person so that we can continue doing our important work.
Follow-up, Vice Chair Mohler?
That's all. Thanks, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you. Next on the list, Representative Johnson.
Chair Becker-Finn, Representative Herr, I understand the need for this, but I see a need in a different way. First of all, I'd like to thank the testifiers that are here today. They do a valuable service through our judicial system, not only in the courts, but also for the investigative side and law enforcement. I've had to use them numerous times. And what's unfortunately, it's going to get much worse. I would love to see many more interpreters that are certified. We need to figure out what we can do to get them certified. I was reading an article about the border crisis right now down in Texas, just at one station on a Sunday. They detained
Representative Johnson, the question before us today is whether we should increase pay for interpreters in the courts here in Minnesota.
That is correct. That is why I'm getting to that point. If I can finish the reasoning, I will get to that.
Okay, let's try to get to it.
Yeah, there was over 1,000 detained, and more than that made it through without getting caught. But with our catch and release, with the border down at the border and the crisis down there, those people are moving, and they're moving all over the country. And that was just one of 79 stations in Texas. We have other states that are having the same issue. These people are going to be coming to Minnesota. We're going to be dealing with them. We need the interpreters. The question I have is, with the border crisis and the need for many more interpreters, not just for the courts, but for our law enforcement side of it, which uses the same interpreters generally, especially if it's an interrogation, they need them. And if there's more than one suspect that they're interrogating, each suspect has their own interpreter. I had a case where I had to have 5 interpreters up here, and it cost my department a couple $1,000 to have those interpreters up here because of the distance they had to travel. We had to get one that had to come from almost 200 miles away to do the interview with the suspect, just because each one has to have their own interpreter. When it comes to the courts, if there's multiple people involved, each one has their own interpreter. With the number that we have, we're in great need. And you, as the testifier said, there's many that are on the roster but are not certified, so they cannot be used in the court systems especially, or in the investigative services. Is raising the pay actually going to help get more interpreters, or is that just to help the ones that we have now? Because we're going to need hundreds of more interpreters within the next year. I'm just wondering how that's going to work.
Representative Herr.
Madam Chair, thank you. And Representative Johnson, I wanted to just take a stab at it first before I turn it over to April. But I just want to be really clear that we actually narrowed the scope of this bill. Originally, this bill also included some additional components of it, and one of it had to do with the certification of our court interpreters, that actually a roster interpreter can interpret in the court system too. So that's why there's a different pay range, but they have to, the objective is to go to a certified first. But since we don't have enough of them, there's an issue of then when we move down to the rostered ones. But I do have to be really honest that is an issue, that when Representative Rotney asked who does the training for this and who provides it, it is our judicial branch that does this. But the problem is that there have not been the services that have been provided for that have not been kept up. And so we actually have some specific languages that don't even have any certified interpreters. And so there is also a request for additional resources in order to continue to certify more interpreters. So that is something that we included originally in this bill, and we narrowed it because we thought it was important to get to not have something so broad. And so know that there will probably be more of our bills coming through to address the system, the issues with the court interpreters and getting the number of interpreters up, but pay also becomes a barrier. And that's why this is the first piece that we narrowed it down to. I don't know if April, if you want to add to that as well.
Ms. Cidio.
Thank you. Representative Johnson, I just want to thank you for your support and your interest in interpreting. And obviously, you understand how important our service is and the great need to have a level of interpreters to be able to do what we need to do professionally within the court system, and the growing need. That's one of the reasons that we've brought this bill. As interpreters, we have observed our colleagues are leaving this profession. And this has been extremely concerning to us. We see that our numbers are dwindling. As a person who runs an interpreting agency to provide judicial interpreters to private law firms, this has been something that I've been having problems with because it's the same pool of interpreters who do private work and who work for the courts. Interpreters are unable to make a living working for the courts because we haven't had a pay raise within the last 24 years. We have had 4% in 24 years, which is not enough to keep people in this very important profession. We're also seeing that we do not have new interpreters joining us in this profession because there is no incentive for them to do so. So what we are seeing is dwindling rates, dwindling numbers of certified interpreters to do this important work, and we are facing a very real crisis. As you have rightly pointed out, we are not going to have the number of professionals to do this work if we can't pay these professionals at a professional rate.
Thank you, Ms. Cedillo. And I will note before we get further in the discussion, I think it is important to just note that we don't have control over federal law and immigration policy, and I just want caution members to be careful in the way we talk about other people. And just because someone may not be a citizen or is a newer immigrant, I just want to be careful in the way that we speak about people and not make any assumptions about criminality or anything like that as we talk about these folks who live in our communities. And so I just think I want to make sure that we're being careful in the way that we talk about our fellow community members. Any additional questions, Representative Johnson?
Chair Becker Finn, Representative Herr, and to the testifiers. Yeah, I see both sides of it. The need for it. I would love to make $50-$60 an hour that the interpreters are making now, but I know that it's not a full-time job, so it makes it a little interesting how it works. But I think maybe we can't tell the courts what to do. Maybe we need to look at the certification process to make sure that we will be able to get those certifications. Is the certification to a point where now it's a higher standard than we need? Although we want top quality interpreters, but we need to figure out how we can get more of them into it at a cost that, especially in the for the law enforcement side, the investigative side, where they can afford to get the interpreters and do their job properly as well. Because when they call these interpreters on the law enforcement side, it's the local jurisdictions that pay for it. And we need to keep the cost reasonable for them or some of these issues. It's going to be very difficult to do a proper investigation and make sure that the constitutional rights of those suspects are protected. So it's a very careful balancing act.
I will just note that we actually can tell the courts what to do. We are the legislature, and we can pass laws to tell them what they need to do. Ms. Cedillo.
2 points. We have been working with the state courts, our group of interpreters, for over 5 years now. We have gone back and gone back and gone back, and we have it's been 5 years that we've been trying to work with them. And we have been unable to get the courts to get the funding that we need, which is why we're here with you now to ask for the funding that we need, working with the court system so that this can become a reality for us. Representative Johnson mentioned perhaps lowering the standards for interpreting so that we can have more interpreters working in our state courts. I would like to point out that the certification exam will pass an interpreter as long as they can pass 3 separate components of the test, each component at 70% accuracy. So a fully certified interpreter has only been proven to be minimally 70% accurate. I would ask the representative if he would like to have less competent interpreters working in our state courts when life and liberty are possibly at stake. I think that a better solution would be to increase pay to a livable wage and to market standards to get competent professionals working within our courts to provide equal access to justice.
Thank you, Ms. Cedillo. A final follow-up, Representative Johnson.
Chair Becker-Finn, I had not planned to speak again. I did not say lower the standards. I said look at them to see if they are in a position where it's almost impossible, basically almost impossible to pass and very difficult. We want the best qualified, but we also want to make sure that our certification system is not obtainable.
And I will note in the work that I've done in my job, particularly in the realm of domestic violence and the need for interpreters, that when you don't have a highly skilled interpreter, it is almost impossible to both do the investigation and to follow through with the court processes and to be, the details really, really matter in the courts as well as on the investigative side. And again, I'll just remind members that the question before us today is whether court interpreter pay should be increased. And with that, Representative Herr, I will give you the final word.
Thank you, Chair Becker-Finn, and thank you, committee members, for hearing our
Madam Chair. I had my hand raised. This is Representative Grossel.
Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Grossel. It was not raised on my screen. Representative Grossel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I hate interrupting you guys, but and I'm having some difficulties with technical stuff this morning, so I apologize. My question, it'll be very quick. As far as who puts the bill for this, am I understanding that the courts fit the bill for this? This won't be an unfunded mandate that we're going to place on counties that are already struggling with funding such things.
I can actually answer that question, Representative Grossel. The reason this bill is before us and not the Public Safety Committee is that this is strictly related to the Supreme Court budget and the court budgets as far as the cost to interpreters in the courts. And so that is why we are laying it over and waiting on the fiscal note here in the Judiciary Committee. Any quick follow-up, Representative Grossel?
No, Madam Chair, other than when we, you made a good point as far as how we talk about our fellow man. And when we use words like racist and things like that flippantly, it's not good. I mean, you brought up the point when Representative Johnson was trying to say that there is a need and there is an influx of people coming into the country. So we all try to do the best we can to make sure that we use proper terminology when we're talking about our fellow man. So I just wanted to add that to the list of the things that you mentioned, which were good points. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you, Representative Grossel. And I will note that pointing out that a policy or a statement is racist is not a personal attack on any person or group of people. It is a, if folks are still confused about what racism and racist means, I would encourage you to go back and read the Select Committee report that came out at the end of the year. It is a very valuable document with includes some definitions for folks if they're still confused or need clarification on what that means. And now, Representative Herr, closing comments.
Thank you, Chair Becker-Finn and committee for letting us have this bill come before you and hearing it again. I did just want to address a couple of things really quickly before we close today that I know Representative Johnson mentioned how he would like to make $50 an hour too. And I want to just reiterate that after paying taxes, fees, and expenses, that the effective rate for an interpreter who is interpreting in a court 15 miles away, so that's usually 3 hours total interpreter time, is only $18.51. And when you, and the effective pay for those that are the assignments that are 30 miles away is only $10.94. And I think that we all know very well that when you are working as a contractor in this way or as an independent individual in this way, that you don't get to keep the whole $50. And so I just want us to be really clear about about that. And the other two is just to reiterate that we have actually been working with the courts, and they were, and the interpreters were working long before I was, and that we've been really respectful of knowing that our judicial branch is a separate branch of government, and though that we appropriate the funds to pay for interpreter fees, that you know, we have done our best in ensuring that we're working closely with Justice Gilda and her team of people. And so we understand walking that fine line. And also just the last piece of it, the how we can, should keep costs reasonable for those who use these services, like, you know, our peace officers or our court system. And for us to understand that we either pay for it now or we pay for it later, that when we don't do a good job in interpreting and ensuring that people have the justice that they need, that when we have to go back and relitigate cases or we have to provide justice for those who did not get justice the first time, that the cost to us is much, much greater than the $50 per hour that would have been paid to our interpreters. And so I just want to make sure to remind us of that, that you know, these things come for a reason, at a price for a reason, is because justice does matter. And so with that, I just want to say thank you all for hearing this, and I look forward to your support and ensuring that we do pay our court interpreters the pay that they deserve. And it's been a long time overdue. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Definitely a very highly skilled position to do that work. And I do want to thank our testifiers for being here today and for the work that they do. It's actually at least one familiar face from my work in Hennepin County, and very much appreciate the work that you all do and how important you are as we seek justice within our court system. So thank you very much. We'll renew Representative Herr's motion. And with that, 972 is laid over for possible inclusion in the Judiciary Finance Omnibus Bill. And that was our last bill, members. I'll still be able to bring my kids to school this morning. I do want to note that our hearing schedule will be slightly different next week. We'll be meeting, our next meeting will actually not be until Thursday. And the agenda will be posted early next week, if not sooner. And then we will also be meeting on Friday to make up for the not meeting on Tuesday next week. So please plan accordingly, members. And thank you very much for another productive week. With that, we are adjourned.